The name of this event is Freedom of Information, a panel discussion on orderly and disorderly methods of information access and release, government secrecy, and what needs to change. A year on from our first event, after WikiLeaks, Is It All Over for the Archives?, we return to the question of how perceptions of our right to information are changing and whether the mechanisms that we have in place to give citizens access to public information are actually properly supporting a just and functional society? And if not, what else is happening to fill the void? most of you, and having just mentioned that our first event last year was in relation to WikiLeaks, most of you perhaps would have noticed that they're back in the news in a big way in the last few days with the release of the global intelligence files, 5 million emails from the geopolitical analysis and intelligence gathering private sector organisation Stratfor. They started to release those emails Monday morning our time. And it was a great, it was great timing for this event. Thank you, WikiLeaks. And made fascinating by the fact that there is this backstory to it around how the emails were initially obtained, which does very well illustrate, I think, this comparison of different ways of accessing and sharing information, which I wanted to sort of be at the heart of this event. I certainly was glued to my Twitter screen around Christmas, New Year, as things were unfolding with Anonymous and Rats for Donovan. It's a little sort of, I won't try to go into that. I'll perhaps let Still fill you in on a bit of the backstory with the Stratfor case. And so it was actually at that time when I was observing that happening that this, the idea for this event came into my mind. And I was just thinking about the different ways that people, activists, journalists and citizens, obtain and share information. And of course, just before I depart from the topic of WikiLeaks, I should, and it's a shame he's not here yet, but acknowledge that Dr. Dorling has the lead story in today's Sydney Morning Herald in relation to what the Stratfor emails in that release actually say about what the United States government is doing in terms of a secret prosecution of Julian Assange. Something that was raised in the Australian Parliament today by Scott Ludlam, unfortunately with little impact on his fellow parliamentarians, but anyway. So the Stratfor emails release embodying in some ways what you might term the disorderly side of information release from the title of this event, provides a good counterpoint to another story about information access from perhaps the orderly domain that I thought I would highlight as well. And this is from just last month when Defence Minister Stephen Smith made the decision to suppress the report of an army inquiry into a disastrous Defence Force commando raid that killed 5 children in Afghanistan 3 years ago. The children were killed when army commandos raided a farm compound in Uruzgan province in the mistaken belief that they would find a Taliban leader there. 2 of the soldiers were later charged with manslaughter. When the Sunday Age sought a redacted version of the final report of the inquiry, with certain sensitive material censored, the Defence Minister said in a written statement, "Given the operational sensitivity of the inquiry officer's report, it is not my intention to release a redacted version of the report." And in its investigation, the Age also established that other material suppressed by court order, official secrecy or FOI exemptions included almost 30 minutes of video footage recorded by a US drone aircraft during the raid. In my view, it's hard to know how operational details from a 3-year-old raid can adequately justify the suppression of this information, particularly given that all legal proceedings coming out of the event have now concluded. The minister's decision seems very much at odds with promises of greater openness and transparency in his department, in his stewardship of it, not to mention the fact that the former joint chief of joint operations, they have such odd names in the Defence Forces, commitment was at the start of the inquiry to make its findings public. So these are the kinds of cases where you can see activists potentially looking at what is occurring and a system that seems to be favouring secrecy and protection of people in power, denying the citizenry its rights to see, in this case, how a terrible tragedy occurred and what has been learned in order to make sure it never happens again, and potentially actively blocking true justice for victims. And in my experience, so many justifications for not providing information under FOI and other legal frameworks are misused. For example, in New South Wales in the past, we had this set of what were called sensitivity labels that agencies were supposed to apply to a lot of their information, including commercial in confidence, used loosely and too often unnecessarily to keep government's dealings with the private sector secret. The very sorts of matters, in my view, that taxpayers actually have an interest and a right to know about. And I was entertained by Humphrey McQueen's explanation at a forum I attended a couple of weeks ago that commercial in confidence actually stood for corruption in the closet. And I would argue that the confusion and problems with access to information laws extend beyond the loose and, in some case, possibly corrupt misuse of exemptions and justifications. I know in my professional life I've always experienced difficulty in trying to piece together the myriad regulatory frameworks that apply to access to information. FOI, privacy, archives laws, security levels, sensitivity labelling. It just doesn't work as a coherent whole, with glaring anomalies at every turn. There's certainly some very good new laws and officers implementing those laws, and I would certainly put what's happening in New South Wales at present in that category. But I would argue that we have a long way to go in terms of the harmonisation of the overall legal framework, not to mention the political will for change and the culture within government departments. There's also the gradual creep of government business into of sensitive areas of government business like intelligence gathering into the private sector, taking it outside of the scope of freedom of information and other laws. Or even if they are supposed to be applied, implementation is poor. So I guess as a record-keeping professional, I'm interested in what we can do to better support access to evidence, to those who have a right and indeed a need to use it. And, you know, there are ways we can do that by building cleverer systems, systems with metadata to ensure that records once open stay open, by working to ensure the long-term availability and authenticity of publicly released information through administrative change and technological change. I think we're in the middle of some pretty seismic shifts of how information can and should flow through governments, business and society in general to help it operate in a manner that is better and fairer. And those of us working in record keeping, I believe, have a great deal that we can contribute to that goal. And I really hope we can explore some of those ways that we can do that tonight. So, our first speaker, who's been launched into first position, and let me just see if I can remember. I have a whole... A